You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in the extremely sunny Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent planet, Miss Ellen. World Wide Web.
It is. World Wide Web is right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can catch the show live. You just hit that listen live button. But if you miss the show for whatever reason, we're on Eastern Standard Time from 1 to 2 o'clock each and every Monday right here on this dial. You can look up any of our archive shows. We're here each and every Monday, and you can just look up Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on there and get us. Of course, we also have it on Facebook, and we also post it on all of the shows on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Yeah, the gentleman who called in last week, he said he could not hear the show when I sent him the link. And I was listening to the show as he was speaking to me, on texting me. Mm-hmm. So I sent him I sent him all the information again, and he was able to get it. You know, the guy who called in.
Right, and I'm I always edit the shows so that way, if people can't hear themselves very well, I always bring up the volume a little bit for them. So when I sent him his part of the show,
you're talking about
good.
My husband.
Yeah.
Aaron and Pierre.
No offense, Mr. D. Yeah. Mr. B.
So we sit here in the studio on Mondays, Ellen, O'Neill, myself, and Samantha, and Paul is here. Now, we have a new guy. Is it Danny? Danny. Yeah. Isn't that like a song named Danny Boy?
That's right. Exactly. One of your favorites.
And Danny is now joining us here to help produce our shows and keep us in check. Yes. Our show is very fun. It's very unscripted. It's educational, informative. And we try to be part of the community that we wish to see. In other words, we try to be part of the change we wish to see. And nobody has all the answers to this wonderful thing called life, right? Mm-hmm. But we learn from each other. We learn from life experiences. We learn from other people's cultures. We learn from talking to people at the gym like I do.
Yeah, right.
And I get a lot of ideas from people. And it's always nice when people can sense that you're a friendly person, you're an open person, and all you want to do is give the world your very best. And so I met such a woman, Marie Hamling, who's going to be on pretty soon. But before we do that, Ellen, let's just tell our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Our show today, we've got a gentleman. His name is Lawrence Overmeyer. Mm-hmm. Did I say it correct?
You're perfect.
He's calling in second to speak about his book, The One Idea That Saves the World. And it is a very good book. I highly recommend it. And our first segment is with Marie Hamling. There is a Hamling in town as well, Susan Hamling.
Yes, because
when I said her name, I'm like, Susan. Susan has that same name,
exactly.
Too.
Now she got a little
and
shout out
Marie is here. She drove in from Mount Dora with her good-looking husband, Irwin.
Yes.
Like
exactly
Steve Irwin.
Right. Yes,
yeah.
Very good.
And so we're happy to have them here. And Marie is here to talk about her book. And before we do that, I just want to tell our listeners, I went to India Fest this weekend, and my little Madison decided to go into the closet and find a beautiful outfit.
Fun.
And she was walking around there. We call her the Windian. She's white and Indian.
Right.
And all these people were coming up to her to take her picture. And she kept saying, am I the queen over here, you think?
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. So we ate. We had a great time. It's nice to share the culture.
Absolutely.
And they give so much back to Brevard, to the community.
Yes.
And then I went home with her and we watched the Madea movie. Mm-hmm. It's a new one, Madea. And something about a graduation and whatever, and we had pizza It was great. It was a good weekend. What about you?
Fantastic. Well, you know, my band plays every weekend, so we were able to participate in a Trailblazers party. That is a dancing group that has a drinking problem, or a drinking group that has a dancing problem. I forget how that goes, but we were able to celebrate Mardi Gras actually all weekend with folks that were having parties and enjoying just the festivities and the lovely little slice of paradise.
Nice to be alive, right?
Wonderful to be.
So, and as far as the war in Ukraine, everybody knows we're all very upset about what's going on.
Yes.
War is never the answer. You know, God gave us senses to speak, to think, to communicate, to walk, to talk, to have conversations with each other and talk about what's happening.
Right.
But some people you can't communicate with, like Marie just said.
Yeah.
But I do think if the mothers and the grandmothers were in charge of the world, for as much as we love our grandchildren, we will not send our kids to war. We would find a way.
Absolutely.
We would find a way out of all these bad, horrible situations. Mm-hmm. It should not be that we go to war because of land and oil and resources and other people making money and contracts to rebuild. It should never be that way. Because at the end of the day, somebody's lost a husband or a son or a daughter or a mom or a dad, and it's very hard to get over those things.
Right.
So I said a prayer for peace, and I figured we'll just have a show today.
And we have to say a prayer for Poland, too, because they've accepted so many of the refugees.
They stepped up to the plate.
They
All
really
those
did
countries
step up
are
to the
stepping
plate.
Up
they
because
really
they
did.
Knew what happened before.
Exactly right.
Right?
Yeah.
Some people learn from history and some people don't.
Yeah.
So our show today, Marie is here. And Marie Hamling, it's so nice that you drove all the way from Mount Dora to join us in the studio, because you know Paul's wife really takes care of us and makes sure our studio looks great, and we're grateful to her.
Well, thank you very much for having me today. I'm very happy to be here.
And you have quite a story. You have quite a story. Your life, you've lived the life of quite a few people already in this one lifetime. You've survived domestic violence. You worked for the Social Security office, and you met Mr. Handsome over there, Irwin. And now he's sitting there listening to your show, and he's a good
man. And we learned a new word.
And we learned a new word. You call him such a lovable, dear term.
Schatzi, that means treasure in German. He was born in Poland and during World War II, and the family survived a lot of abuse and terror in Russian labor camps, and they escaped overnight on a freight train to Germany right after the war, and he grew up in Germany, and he came to this country when he was 15.
So he also has a lot of stories to tell. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, your bio is quite extensive, but since you're here and you could talk to us, I think you should tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. I grew up in various places, New York and Delaware and Illinois. My parents were Holocaust survivors from Germany. I'm an only child, and I have a background in art, and I worked as a photographer. I've been studying cello for 8 years. Originally, I majored in music therapy, and I was a music therapist and studied voice and played piano and flute. But Sita mentioned, I worked for the Social Security Disability Program for many years, and I'm retired now. But my main interest is cello. But I wrote a novel, started to write the novel about 4 years ago, and it was about a woman who survived abuse, domestic violence. And the story was mostly to create abuse awareness and help others. Even though I wrote it as an entertaining novel. It is also about a daughter of Holocaust survivors, and it's not my story by any means, but it's about a young woman, and she's also an only child who grew up in Queens, and she ends up in LA, and she becomes involved with a Hollywood pianist who's from Argentina, and his family was also torn apart by war. It has nothing to do really with his behavior, but the Argentines suffered a lot in the 1970s under the dirty war, Guerra Sucia, which really tore the country apart. And they were refugees. There were many refugees to the United States. And in the story, his family escaped and fled to the United States, to California. So, and then, of course, the girl in the story, her parents were German Holocaust survivors. but the it's how she survives abuse and how she deals with it and her children. And she and the story starts with her fleeing to Florida from California to escape from this guy. And she flees with the youngest daughter. And it's how she copes and how the how you know what happens, and it turns a little bit into a thriller because he finds them.
Yeah, you've quite an imaginative mind.
Exactly.
So, but Marie, you had quite a childhood as well. You had a troubled childhood as well. Your dad and your mom had their issues, and your mom had some mental illness as well.
That's
so
correct.
You've survived.
That's correct. My father left my mother when I was two, and she had to raise me alone in the 50s when there was really nothing like a single parent. It, you know, that was unheard of that there were single parents. So it was quite a challenge. And we moved around a lot and changed schools. And I saw my father on the weekends, but, you know, he was well-to-do. He worked for the United Nations. He was a professor, a lot of things. So he was quite comfortable with his wife and everything. But, you know, and then on during the week, I had to, you know, I lived with my mother, and she was difficult. She had a lot of mental problems.
Right, and you also had to switch your religions as well, your religion.
Well, she had switched, really. She was raised, they were both the Jewish families, from Jewish families, but she was raised as a Lutheran because my grandfather was told at the beginning of the 20th century, already before Hitler, that he had to convert to Christianity or lose his job as a tax judge. So they became Lutherans, and then she converted to Catholicism. So I grew up basically with exposure to Judaism, but also with some exposure to Catholicism. So I went to some Catholic schools growing up.
It sounds like your mom had her own demons in her head. She was she smoked. She was on prescription drugs.
Correct.
Did she ever seek mental health treatment? Because
In
those days, people didn't even talk about bipolar disorder or anything.
That's what I think she had. No, nobody spoke about it. The family enabled her. Everybody was hush hush. My father didn't want to deal with her. You know, he was divorced already. It was all be nice to your mother, be nice to your mother. So I grew up thinking she was normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to really unlearn everything that I'd learned from her when I was out in the real world in college and everything, because I learned people weren't like that.
Right.
It was hard because I grew up also rather isolated. You know, in this type of situation. She was very protective, but she was also extremely paranoid. So it was a very hard childhood, but I've, you know, put it behind me and, you know, I'm moving on and looking at the positive things.
Right. And the thing is, what you took from that, the verbal abuse, the mental abuse, the family height, sweeping it under the rug, you took it and you made yourself a better human being. And
I
think your book reflects that
right.
as well. Right. So tell us a little bit, if somebody wanted to buy your book, where is it selling right
okay.
now?
My book is called Distant Turns, and it refers to how the girl relates to the man in her life and how she's turning away from him. But it's called Distant Turns, and it can be found online at Amazon, either in soft cover or Kindle, or you can find it at Barnes & Noble, either at soft cover or Kindle. And I've seen it at the Barnes & Noble store in Altamont Springs.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Yeah. I took a picture.
Yeah. So I have to tell you a really funny story. When Sita's book first came out, I went in and asked, like, I was like, it was a, you know, like, Sita McGee wrote a novel. Like, you have to have it. And they were like, no, we don't have it. I said, well, you need to order me five of them because I need five copies. And then I only bought three. And then two more were left on the shelf, and then they kept reordering them.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
wonderful.
It was kind of like, so I told Sita, I was like, it was so cool walking into Barnes & Noble and seeing you on the shelf.
Yeah.
It was
amazing. So you can get it on Kindle, and you can get it in Nook or on soft cover. And my publisher, Author House, did a beautiful job with the formatting. And also the front has an illustration. It's a portrait of the young woman in the book, actually done by one of my former employees, and that lives
so
in
cool.
Virginia, and she's a fabulous artist.
It's nice when you and your former employees and your former students keep in touch, right? So a lot of people have stories to tell, Our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, have become a place where authors can safely call in or come in and visit like you did and talk about their books. When did you have that moment when you said, you know what, I'm going to write this book? Because, you know, we all write down notes and we're going to write a book. What happened that day and you said, I'm going to start it?
Well, you know what, I have been thinking about my past. Then we ran into a very sad situation, which thankfully was somewhat rectified. But when we sold, in 2017, when we sold our house in Longwood, the title company wired the money to a scammer instead of to our account.
That's another book in the making.
That's right. And we got most of it back, thankfully, but we still missed a big chunk. But it was so stressful emotionally that I turned to diversions, and I had stopped and I had started a few novels in the past and then just kind of dropped them because I didn't like the way they were going. And then I thought about this abuse in general, and I thought, well, let me write a story. And then the story kind of came to me, and I was working on it off and on since 2017. And I'm also a member of the Florida Writers Association and the Florida Authors and Publishers Association, so that's been very helpful for me. And
I bet people ask you if this is your story.
It's not.
But you know, a lot of authors, they do have some element of themselves in that book or something in their past.
Maybe the pain that I felt, but I used realistic scenarios, being that I've worked in mental health for so many years and have a music therapy. I know the types of scenarios that take place and the types of manipulative techniques that narcissists use, and that's kind of what I focused on because so many people are gullible to that kind of stuff.
We see it every day.
Yes.
You turn on the news and you see it all the time, and it's sadly a lot of these narcissistic people run for office.
Yes.
And they know how to hook the people to vote for them too.
Yes.
You know.
Exactly. And this is what happens. I took a character. I didn't make him tall, dark, and handsome by any means, but I made him use love bombing to lure her in, which is what narcissists do. They charm, they throw flowers, gifts, everything. They just lure, they find a victim and they lure them in. Mm-hmm. And then primarily emotional, but also some other types of abuse. I minimized physical. I used some sexual, but mostly emotional abuse, just because that's how they work the mind. Gaslighting, for one thing, is in there.
And, you know, every day you see things like that. I mean, I heard somebody talking about one of the shows that Mr. Kanye West just had, and he did something to the boyfriend of Kim Kardashian. The fella from Saturday Night Live. I don't know why his name is not coming to me right now. But people were saying that it's dangerous when you're watching people on stage take a life and rip somebody up like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we're watching that every day. People who've had past experiences with abuse, they become abusers themselves.
That's correct. And people are gullible too. People in the relationship, they want to please their partner often, you know, and the partner just gradually manipulates them and controls. It's a lot of, with narcissists, it's about control. They want to control, they want to have, you know, to have a say over this person. And then their partner starts to doubt themselves, you know, in a relationship, they doubt themselves. And that's why they get gaslighting is so horrible and they're so susceptible to it, just because they want to believe and do whatever their partner tells them to.
Right.
They want to hold peace.
So many times we see, you know, coworkers, we see people in the grocery stores, we see people at church, but you don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
You can't
tell. You really don't, because people put up a good front.
They do.
They put up a good front to hide the abuse, whether it's verbal, mental, physical, emotional. The guy name is Pete Davidson. And, and everyone is talking about how he ripped up like something on stage to pretend he's doing something to him. Mm-hmm. And it's not good. It's not good. Nobody should be doing that, right?
No.
So what kind of challenges, Marie Hamling, did you face writing your book?
Well, part of it was I had to put my own feelings and own experiences somewhat aside, okay, because it was not my story. but I had to maintain a realistic focus about what a narcissist would do. And so I tried to stay realistic in that aspect, in the reactions, responses, dynamics, and also significantly that how the person does present a side. So in this one side, and is in reality things are different. So in this case, the narcissist, this guy who's a Hollywood pianist, he has his own life, he kind of has his own life and keeps his wife and children and family at home. It's sort of, he has that double life. But he presents as this jolly, happy, funny guy using props and making everybody laugh and trying to be popular. And he's really very different on the at home.
Right.
On the inside.
It sounds like he really is a control freak.
Yes, he is.
Isn't that what abuse is anyway? It's about power and control of someone else.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. And it's also an indifference to their feelings and emotions. And what's interesting too, a lot of narcissists look for what they call empaths, women or partners that are sensitive and caring.
Weak.
And want to make the other person happy and sensitive to the other person's feelings. Yeah. But they're not. Yeah. It's like a total opposite.
And I wonder why people choose these folks over and over again. Like, you'll hear stories about someone who left an abusive relationship. And they'll put it on Facebook. We just had somebody in Palm Bay that was killed.
Our good friend.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, she was murdered. And the guy took his own life as well. Just what, last week? And everyone is posting about it.
Yeah, it's our ABWA sister.
That's right. And then you see the pictures. They're all happy. Everybody's great. Everything's great. And all of a sudden, 2 or 3 months later, it's dissolved. They picked the wrong guy again. Mm-hmm. It's like people want to be loved and appreciated so much that they would just go with just about anybody just to find that. But really and truly, that comes from within. You have to be able to love yourself first and respect yourself before you can get that from someone else.
But that the narcissists are always looking, to what Marie said, are always looking for the codependent women.
That's
and
right.
And codependency,
the weak
is
ones.
Codependency is sort of like the match for narcissism. You know, and if those two work together, I mean, that's what makes that work. And unfortunately, somebody's going to suffer.
But we've seen very affluent women, highly educated. That
doesn't mean they're not codependent.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
doesn't.
The thing is, abuse and power and control gets about just about anyone. Mm-hmm. It's lurking. It's the rich, the poor. Doesn't matter your race, your religion, whatever you are. People get hurt by these men and these women who are out to get someone else and control their lives.
It does happen. And, you know, a lot of times the women were groomed from day one. They grow up in an abusive relationship with abuse around them. And this is what...
It becomes a normal thing
for them. And I was told, like I said, I was in an abusive marriage for 20 years, my first marriage. And the man's now remarried. I won't mention his name or anything, but I was told that his current wife, she was married now for the third time, and her second marriage was divorced due to domestic violence. And we ran into them a few years ago in a store, and she had bruises all over her face. So he was escalating into physical abuse.
So she chose the wrong guy again.
Right. So what happens is, you know, you grow up, you're groomed into this. You're groomed to be, you know, to placate, to please. Yes, it's okay if they're mean to you. They just love you anyway, or whatever you think. And then
some
you
of these men even tell you how to vote, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They do.
They do.
It's disgusting. So,
but the awareness that your book brings too—that's the gift in all of this. You know, just like Irwin talks about you being his gift, right? You know, and all of that this is your gift that you've given back to everybody. Because when you read a story like that, sometimes, for me anyway, I do get in the character. You know, yeah. I get into the book and really, and then you start kind of analyzing your own life and saying, well, where are these little red flags that I should be watching out for? So thank you. If nobody's ever
thank
said
you.
That, thank you for bringing that out. And also your own story and Irwin's story about, you know, what you survived, because people can survive anything. You know,
right.
That's the beauty. So
we have a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about your blog. You also have an abuse blog.
Correct.
And tell us about some of the stories that you get people that are writing about. to you to talk about.
Okay. I have had a little bit of feedback, but what I've been trying to do on the abuse blog, which is http://www.mariehammerlingauthor.com, is to put in different information about narcissism, different types of abuse. One blog was about people who abuse and then act like it's a joke. They're teasing someone, but they're really abusing them. Today I put in, you know, listen to my story on the radio. But I do try to keep up to that and to inform people. And, you know, I hope more people will sign up. So I'm trying to spread the word and to help people and get a message out there.
So on your website, there's a little blurb about September 11th. And it's very powerful because so many people lost their lives on that ill-fated day, right? But how many people had stopped to think that morning, I need to be kind, I need to be nice, I need to speak to my parents with respect, speak to my wife with respect, my children. Tell our listeners a little bit about that piece you have on your website, because it is powerful, it is moving, it's motivating, and everybody should hear that.
Thank you. Well, this is a little spoiler alert, but the girl in the book, and her name is Tina Perry, the heroine of the book, she has...
This is Find and Focus or another book?
This is Distant Turns, novel. Yeah. Distant Turns. She's had a problematic relationship with her parents, and her mother and stepfather get killed in 9/11.
Right.
In a plane crash, so...
But the conversation before she boarded the aircraft, before the mother left,
right,
that was powerful because the daughter wasn't expecting the mother to die on 9/11.
No, she wasn't. And it was like she was really reluctant to have her come visit in the first place.
Yes, and how many of us go through that? Well, they're coming, I have to clean up the house again, you know.
Yes.
But then they call you downstairs, the police is there at your workplace and says, hey, we need to talk to you. You're listed as the next of contact on this airplane flight. It's your parents. They just died on 9/11.
Correct.
Right?
That's correct. That's correct. So it makes her go through a lot of emotions and thinking, and still she's
what
still
ifs.
Torn in conflict. Right, what ifs.
And really quickly, I want to give you an extra minute or two. Your characters for the book, you bring all the characters alive in your book. Where did you get the inspiration for your characters?
Well, it was hard. I had to think a lot. What would make these people unique? And so a lot of what I developed was, I developed the characters, not only with their flaws or positive, negative traits, but who they were, what they liked, where they came from. You know, just trying to get the personalities. I, you know, really worked on those to build those. And I did draw some inspiration from some general, of course, everything's been changed. People have been changed and everything. But, you know, I worked on the character development to make sure that they wouldn't be two-dimensional. I wanted to make them real people to step out.
Well, your book sounds fascinating. And I hope, Ellen, you're going to put it on our website. And in addition
right
to her, Marie Hamling, being an author and writing the book Distant Turns, it is a novel about abuse and survival. And I think it's great because when you write a book and you also have that personal experience, you can bring that into it and it becomes more powerful. But you also are a photographer.
Yes.
So you're a photographer, you have the blog, you're also playing the cello, you wrote a book. My goodness.
And you're going to be in where's your concert in Maitland?
Okay, I play with the Maitland Symphony Orchestra. We're having a concert on May 22nd at Venue on the Lake in Maitland, Florida. I believe it's at 7 p.m. I am not 100% sure, but I believe so.
Well, if you give us the correct date,
I will
make sure that we get that on our website and all of our information so that way anybody can come see you, because you said the concert's free, correct?
Right. That one, they might charge $10 or so, I'm not sure. But next Sunday, we're participating in two church services at the Maitland Presbyterian Church. At one service is at 9 a.m. and the other service is at 11 a.m. And we'll be playing for both services. And those are definitely free. And hope you'll come join us.
And you know, Marie is sitting next to me here. And what I'm seeing is the child of Holocaust survivors, the child who faced so much abuses and challenges in her life. And I'm seeing a person that came through all of it, still smiling, still standing.
And with the love of her life.
And giving back to us. people who like to read the United States, people all over the world can read her book and learn something from it. And stand up and smile. Like, she's beautiful. Look at her smile.
Oh, thank you. And thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Lifelong
in.
Friends now. Once you're part of the Absolutely. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends family, your family for life. Curry chicken will be coming soon, I'm
I
sure.
I know, I'm pretty
and
sure.
And noodle noodle.
Yeah, it's nice. Yes. And Paul is ready for us to go to
he
second
is.
Segment.
We're going to go right to our sponsors real quick, and then
give,
we're going to hear.
Let her give her website one more time where someone can go and at least get on her blog. If you want to give us your website one more time.
It's HTTPS. /// www.mariehammerlingauthor.com. And I'm also on Facebook, Marie Hammerling Author Photographer, and on Instagram as Marie Hammerling Author, I believe, and on Twitter. So
that's awesome.
You're welcome, you know,
to find
come
you.
Find me anytime.
And we will make sure all of that stuff is posted. But right now, we're going to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, 100.7. And my good friend Ellen will tell our listeners how to tune in on the World Wide Web.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can find all of our shows archived there, as well as our, if you want to listen right now, you can just hit that Listen Live button and you'll be right on the air to hear us live.
That's right.
Yeah.
So our first segment was awesome with Marie Hamling, and she spoke about her book and her survival of abuse, verbal abuse, domestic violence, and so many other things. She's a child of Holocaust survivors.
Yeah. And a single mom.
And her mother and father had a hard life, so we have to excuse them for whatever happened in her life as well. Right. And we learn from it, right?
We always learn.
We had a Holocaust survivor on last week as well, and never to be repeated, so the world has to pay attention.
That's right.
Our second segment is with a gentleman that, you know, I meet the nicest, God sends the most wonderful people my way, and they just come on my Facebook, or I find them, and then I get them to come on our show, and it's awesome. And I have to thank our sponsors for this segment. Lawrence Overmeyer, you said I'm saying it correctly, is the author of The One Idea That Saves the World, A Message of Hope in a Time of Crisis. And boy, do we need his calm voice right now, now in his second edition. And I was going to read his entire bio, Ellen, but I'm going to let him speak about it because he's on the phone. So, Lawrence, thank you, Mr. Overmeyer. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a poet, you're an author, you also performed on Broadway, you did film and television, you're teaching stuff. Your bio is beautiful, and I could just see you right in front of me doing all these awesome things. So tell our listeners a little more about yourself.
Well, basically, I'm an artist, and my art expresses itself in many different ways, and essentially I'm a poet. So I have kind of a poet's sensibility, and as a poet, I keep in mind the big picture. I keep in mind all of humanity. And so my message is basically, how do we all come together? And that's what my book's going to be about, too.
I got your book, and I read it. And, you know, when we talk about the house is on fire and who is rushing to save the house, I have to say that I am a number four or a number five.
No, I can't wait to
read
it now.
And if it's okay with you, why don't I read the poem so that the audience knows just what we're talking about.
Please do, because I read it for my husband, and I read a couple, and then he says, I'll have to read the book. Please don't read it to me.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. But this poem sets up the whole book, and of course I'm a poet, so I started off with a poem. It's called The House Is on Fire. The people in the house are sleeping and in great danger. Seven of their neighbors will come along, each with an opportunity to save them. Person number one does not see the fire. Consumed in his own thoughts, he passes by in ignorant oblivion. Person number two sees the fire, but not wanting to get involved, walks on by. Person number three sees the fire, but shocked and terrified, is left immobilized in a state of panic. Person number four sees the fire and immediately takes action. First, phoning the fire department, then knocking on the door to wake up the inhabitants. Person number five sees the fire and, daring what no one else would, enters the house to try to save the inhabitants. Person number six sees the fire, surveys the scene, and discovers an opportunity to promote his own interests and make a buck. He's the one handing out his business card to sell his stuff. Person number seven set the fire and lurks unnoticed, watching the destruction, not caring really about anything at all. The house is Mother Earth. Which person are you?
Oh my goodness, powerful.
And let me tell you, you have got the most awesome voice. You've got to make sure that this is an audio.
Yeah.
Because you reading that poem, Sita was handing me the book so I could read it with you, and I was like just enthralled with the way that you were reading it yourself. So beautiful.
Well, thank you very much.
And you know, Mr. Overmeyer, the world need you and your voice right now. There's a certain part in the book that I highlighted, and you talk about that it's very important for all of us to stand up for what is right. What
Absolutely.
Is right is based on the common good, compassion for mm-hmm. all, the one idea.
Right.
All of us are in the bucket brigade that must put out the flames. And that in itself is so powerful, because how many people don't feel as though they're part of the bucket brigade?
Yeah, so those people are the ones and the twos and the threes who just don't want to pay attention, don't want to get involved. But we need all good people to come together and be the fours and fives in the poem, the people that do something, the people that help. And we can all help in our own different ways. Everybody's different, and everybody's got different ways to help. And, you know, with the crisis in the Ukraine right now, it's heartening to see all the good people coming together, to see all the different things that people are doing to help the Ukrainians who are in such a dire situation.
Yeah, it's almost like another world is possible, right? The last chapter in
yeah,
your
absolutely.
Book is about another world is possible. But another
yes.
world is possible when people educate themselves and act upon it.
Absolutely. Yeah, education is really important. And all of us, you know, it doesn't have to be formal education. It does have to be paying attention to the truth tellers, the people that are telling us the truth. And right now you have a lot of unscrupulous people and various entities that are spreading disinformation and misinformation and lies, and that's all meant to divide us. And we've got to really seek out truth, and each of us needs to take on that responsibility, educate ourselves about what's going on, and find a way to help out.
Well, yeah, and you know, change does start with each of us as individuals, right? And
mm-hmm.
what I notice is, I mean, you pretty much outlined in the book what a lot of us are thinking, but we don't know how to put it in words the way you, with that voice and that writing skills in it. It's about the corporate media and how
right.
many people don't understand that the ads on the television screen, the consumerism, what they want you to buy, what they want you to hear, what they want you to see, that's what's really the big picture with them. They're not telling us the truth.
Yeah, they want to make money, and we have to understand that. Their objective is to make money, so they will pander to other sides, but unfortunately, they're pandering to the liars. They're not telling us the truth. And the media should be focused on the truth. They should always be telling us the truth and telling us all the truth, not just half of it, because half-truths can be just as dangerous as lies. So we really need to know what's going on.
Right. And the thing is, we don't want people not to make money. People need to survive, pay their
right.
mortgages, car insurance,
oh,
healthcare
sure.
bills, put food on the table. But it should be in such a way that it's well balanced and it's fair and it's the truth
yeah.
and let us think about what we're watching. So let's talk a little bit about the one big idea, which is the one idea that saves the world. And I love
right.
your idea that we're all interconnected. How did you come up with this theme, this idea for this book?
Well, I was thinking about how do we deal with this problem where, you know, I first wrote this book in 2012, and our world was so divided with politics and religion and racism. And I was thinking, is there one thing that we can, most of us anyway, can agree on that will help us to create a healthy world? And I think there is an idea, and it's a very, very old idea, and it's so simple. It's part of every major religion, and it's acknowledged by atheists and agnostics as well, because within this idea, you can find the moral center of the universe, the ethical guideline for living, whether you believe in a God or not. You might say it's the place where science and religion intersect and truly find compatibility. And moreover, I would suggest that living this idea, making it a part of our everyday consciousness, is the fundamental shift that we as a species must make. There can be no real change without it. Without it, ultimately, we will destroy all that is best about ourselves and our beautiful planet. So the way that this idea is typically expressed is this: we are one. That's how it's usually expressed. And what it means is that we're all part of a whole. We're all interconnected and interdependent upon one another for our well-being. And the times are so critical that we cannot afford to behave selfishly with no regard for others. And we should also understand that everything we do, all of our actions, have subtle effects. It's like ripples in a pond. And these actions can have positive or negative consequences. So if we want to heal the world, we need to focus on efforts that do positive things. So I always encourage people to commit to compassion and kindness in everything we do.
Right.
And I call it becoming our best selves.
And you know, a lot of us talk about equality. We talk about income and inequality, and then we talk about equality for all human beings, right? And that we're all created equal. But in a healthy world, we all seek what is based on equality. Equality is for all people. No one should be oppressed. To be on the right side of history is to advocate for the rights and the well-being of not just ourselves, but of all people. And you bring that out in this book so wonderfully. And I have to tell you, I read it in like 4 hours and I didn't put it down. Because you hooked me the minute I read that poem. And I realized I was number 5. I wanted to see, well, let me read more about myself.
Right. And, you know, the things that people have told me about the book, it's the kind of book where you can just open it to any page and it'll bring up an important issue and you can consider that. So people are also using it as a kind of daily affirmation of what life is all about, really. And what this what Martin Luther King called it, he called it the interrelated structure of reality. We're all interconnected. And when I help you, I help myself. And when I hurt you, I hurt myself. And it's such a universal principle. And if we all took it to heart and started living it, we really would change the world.
Yes. And you know, you're so right. I just picked up the book and I turned to page 115, where you speak about poverty and the poor. And basically, you're saying that the poor cannot afford campaign contributions. And it's a very shameful development taking place in American history that, you know, that the poor are used for political gain so many times. And they're painted as poor and lazy and all that. And I felt at that part of the book, you were actually speaking to people like myself who would put in an extra shift to get that couple $100 and say, I'm going to donate this money to a political candidate, because maybe some of the coworkers that I work with can't afford it, or maybe some people I know can, but I would be their voice by donating this money to this political candidate to speak for all of us collectively. And I felt as though it was a spiritual part of the book for me, because I actually have become the voice for a lot of people.
Oh, and that's exactly what the one idea is. It's you, each of us, helping other people in whatever way we can. And we need to speak for especially the poor and the oppressed and the downtrodden, because they do not have much of a voice, and we have to speak for them. And the sad thing is that in our politics, there are efforts to hurt the poor. They're actually trying to keep them down, and they're not, you know, being generous with all the resources that we have. I mean, we are the richest country in the world, in the United States, and the poverty is a real, real shame in this country.
I'm going to give the book to Ellen, and she's going to open it to a page, and let's see what idea she'll come up with.
Okay.
But in the meantime, while she's doing that, we talk about the golden rule, right? So is the golden rule part of the one idea? We all hear people say, be your brother's keeper, be your sister's keeper, and not just in thoughts and words, but in actions as well. But I think that has a lot to do with the golden rule and your one idea, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, love, compassion, and the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. They're all inherent in the one idea. And when I use the word love, I mean it in the broadest sense of the word, to include all that is good in the world: kindness, empathy, compassion, generosity, cooperation, forgiveness, understanding, respect, appreciation, gratitude, sacrifice. This is what the world is all about. It's all about love. And the golden rule is really about loving yourself and others. And again, it's a part of all the major religions and all the religious traditions.
So I just wanted to give our listeners a little idea who we're speaking with. This wonderful voice you're hearing is none other than Lawrence Overmeyer, which Ellen, make sure I said the name correctly.
Yeah, you got it right.
He's the author of The One Idea That Saves the World, A Message of Hope in a Time When We Need It. And he's an educator. He is a poet. He is a teacher. He's a genealogist. And just trying to make our world a better place, a peaceful place. And he also performed on Broadway, film, and television. And I am so honored that you, Mr. Overmeyer, took the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Ellen's got her page, and she's ready to go.
What did you come up with, Ellen?
Well,
you know, one of my favorites is about forgiveness.
Right.
That everybody needs forgiveness. Everybody needs to practice forgiveness, and everyone needs to be able to receive forgiveness. And one of the things that I thought was very, like, just
moving,
stuck right out at me. Page 105, practicing forgiveness doesn't mean accepting wrongdoing. And the poem that was written on that page, forgiveness requires putting aside the ego to acknowledge the interconnection of one human being to another. So it doesn't mean that we're all going to be perfect, and it doesn't mean that we're going to wrong people, but forgiveness is a powerful thing to give somebody, and it's the greatest gift.
It frees you.
It really does. It not only frees us, but it frees the other person.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, especially with social media and all of the things that people are just kind of like hating on each other about for really no reason.
Yeah.
Your thoughts about that one particular part, Mr. Overmeyer.
I just love what you said. You encapsulated it all. And I know from my own experience, I couldn't heal myself until I forgave. And that's really, it will do such wonders for your own self if you can forgive others. And I'm not here to say that it's easy. It's difficult, but it's a journey worth taking, because ultimately it will free you.
Yes.
And it frees other people as well.
And you know, as I read the book, certain people stood out in front of me, like, your book has so many people invisible that I know in life. Like when you spoke about earth consciousness, I could see my husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he wakes up every day to take care of his plants and his animals, and he's a vegetarian, and he can't see anything being killed. And he's, you know, and I see him in front of me, and I'm like, there's so many people that are conscious of this great planet that the good Lord has given us to enjoy, but a lot of people just abuse our earth. So talk to me a little bit about the earth consciousness and why we should care.
Yeah, so earth consciousness is part of the one idea that what we do to the environment and our fellow creatures, we also do to ourselves. That's the one idea. So earth consciousness is about having an awareness at all times of how our personal and communal actions, thoughts, and feelings affect the earth itself and all life upon it. So remember, everything is interconnected. And the more we understand how what we do affects other things and other people, then we can really make wise choices. And what I call for, I call people to teach respect. Respect for planet Earth and all living things. And this is what Einstein called the widening our circle of compassion. It includes not only our family, it includes other people, it includes all of humanity, and widening even further, it includes other creatures and the earth itself. And that's where we need to go. If we can get there, boy, will we heal the world.
Yeah. And when you spoke about the small business uh-huh. model, and you talked about, you know, the small business over the large corporations, you spoke about my son-in-law, Scotty, who has a mattress and a furniture shop here in town. and gives his customers his utmost best because he wants to survive. He wants to live. He's not out to scam anybody. And I thought about that when you talked about the ethical corporations and the wave of the future. So if you can, touch about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I study history as a genealogist and the whole history of this country. And, you know, small business is what everything started with. And that was about your neighbors, your friends and neighbors, and you're helping each other, and you're buying goods and services, and they are thriving, and you are thriving. Small business works because it's about human beings. And the problem with corporations is they get so huge that they lose the humanitarian side of things. They lose the connection to real people. And, you know, really what happens is a big corporation loses empathy. It loses the ability to think about other people. And, you know, that's really what the problem is. We've got these huge organizations, these huge corporations that don't care. And they don't care who gets hurt. All they care about is making money. And that's really not the way to go.
Selfishness and greed. That stands right out.
Well, and it's people being in an office moving a mouse around instead of being out with the people and finding out what's happening in those corporations. It's just everything is run by numbers anymore. It's not run by people.
Right.
It's unfortunate.
Right. And one way to change that is for the people in the corporations to practice the one idea, especially if you can get to the higher up people. And if they start thinking about, you know, what are the ramifications of what we're doing? Are we hurting other people or are we helping other people?
Mr. Overmeyer, I'm getting a signal. We only have 2 minutes. I can't believe it went by so fast. Really quickly, what do you think? What about the values? How do we change our values, if you can, in 2 minutes?
Yeah, well, the first and most important one, we have to value truth. We have to demand honesty and integrity from our leaders, the media, our businesses, and our institutions, and hold them accountable when they fail. And the second one, we must value one another and planet Earth over the accumulation of money, goods, and power. And that's what we were just talking about with corporations. So we need to make important decisions based on the wisdom of long-term considerations for the greater good rather than short-term financial gain for the few. And the third one I would emphasize is we must value generosity. We must gladly give of ourselves to help others, our fellow man and our fellow creatures. And interestingly enough, that's what's happening in Ukraine right now. Good people are stepping up to help other people.
And your book, A Message of Hope in a Time of Crisis, can be found where?
You can find it at Amazon. It's kind of the place most people go, but you can find it at any bookstore. And if they don't have it, just ask for it and they can always order it for you. So it's basically available everywhere.
Well, we will make sure that everyone in our circle knows about this book because you've impacted Sita and I greatly, as well as the many, many listeners, I was just going to say viewers, that are here on the radio show.
I would love for you to call back in again and with us, so I'll give you another date. I'll send you an email maybe sometime in September, October, because I'd love for you to read another poem on air for us. We just love your voice.
Thank you to Marie Hammerling for hanging out with us today, and also to Lawrence Overmeyer. What a fantastic show today, Sita. Thank you so much for all the great guests. Please tune in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you next week.